Monday to everyone out there. Happy March break Monday, if you're lucky enough to be off. Maybe just slowly starting the day right now. Certainly lighter traffic out there this morning, so I think a lot of people are off this week, along with the kids. I'll tell you, not a bad Monday to have taken off. I was talking last week about how I don't mind the time change at all. I like the fact that we gain that extra hour of sleep in the fall. I like the fact that it gets lighter earlier in the evenings after the time change before the spring, almost spring. Look forward to that as we leave work tonight, that it starts to be a little bit lighter in the sky. That's a lovely thing. But should there maybe be a rule that they can't change the clocks the weekend of the 7-hour Oscar telecast? That was a bit of a late night last night, and did feel it this morning. It felt like it was dark and early, and like we should all be entitled to lie in bed for that extra hour this morning. So a bit of a struggle to get up. I'm pretty sure there's a few others out there who also maybe on the regular day schedule today who found it a little bit tougher this morning. But it's done now. It's Monday. We got this. And I hope a lot of you have a lighter week this week, a little bit of a fun week, enjoying some maybe staycation time with the kids, all of that, or the grandkids out there this morning as we get into our Big Five.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah, great. Let's hear it.
Ottawa at Work. Big Five stories.
I just want to say thank you for this acknowledgement, because it couldn't be done without my cast. It's been like I've been on a diving expedition on the bottom of the ocean, and the air on the line to the surface is on a launch being watched over by some people in my life.
Periods of snow to
for all the little boys and girls who look like me watching tonight. This is the beacon of hope and possibilities. This is proof that dreams dream big, and dreams do come true. And ladies, don't let anybody tell you you are ever past your prime. Never give up.
Never past your prime. Those were the two big acting awards last night. Brendan Fraser accepting for Best Actor for his performance in The Whale. Michelle Yeoh accepting for the night's big winner, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. The big disappointment of the night, Rosietta, who you heard briefly there in the middle, didn't win again. But, you know, it could happen at some point. Anything can happen as we bring in our panelists today. I'm alone in studio, but not really alone. Andrew Pinson is here, our weekend host on CFRA, and a regular panelist on the show as well. Good morning, Andrew.
And good morning, Tricia.
John Krupe as well, joining us from our CTV Ottawa newsroom, our assignment editor downstairs. Morning, John.
Happy spring break.
So talk to me, you guys, first of all, before we go into the Oscars. Was it tough for you to get up this morning, or am I just being whiny on a Monday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I hosted the Sunday show yesterday, so it was pretty tough to get up for the new 6 o'clock, whatever that was. But
yeah,
feeling a lot better today. I don't know, after 24 hours.
Yeah. Do you stress out when you know you have to host on a Sunday morning after the time change on a Saturday night? Is it an extra alarm that you set? You're checking it every hour? Because I'm the worst when I know I have to get up earlier than usual.
Not too much stress out as much as I hate it. So I'll just be pushing myself going to make sure I'm going to bed type thing. But yeah, showed up on time, so I think that's the big win. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's we don't ask for anything more than that from our,
that's right,
people. Okay, did you guys watch last night? Because I know it used to be a time when you couldn't imagine anyone not sitting down to watch the Oscars on a Sunday night. Times have changed a little bit now, but did you guys at least dip in?
I did. So we had Oscars.
Yes.
We had the Senators at 9 o'clock. And there's a little bit of tennis in there as well. I was watching some of the tennis.
And I was texting with Leah LaRocque, who was watching the curling, which I realized, I'm not sure what time that wrapped up. It was a bit earlier in the evening. I should have been watching that, because we have the World Championships coming here to Ottawa, right? Brad Gushue won again and will be representing Canada. And we should be prepared for that, because we're going to be live from there every day when that happens, I think early April. But curling for me.
And while we're at it, if it was on, I would have watched it, but I couldn't find it. I guess I had to go online, which I'm not apt to do when I'm on the couch. But the Carleton men's and women's basketball teams.
Yes.
First time in 38 years that both, you know, the champions from one school.
We are going to be talking to one of the coaches from the Ravens a little bit later this morning. Yes, that's pretty amazing accomplishment as a dynasty continues to be thrown around there with the Carlton Ravens. Just an incredible sports franchise, really. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, there was a lot going on yesterday for sure. I love the Oscars. I usually try to watch all the movies. I didn't get it done this year. It was just a busy year, but I watched a bunch of them. I had definitely watched Everything Everywhere All at Once and kind of love seeing it have its night. Didn't win the big Oscar pool, the work Oscar pool. That went to Don McLean, our graphics artist, who cheated. I'm sure he cheated somehow, but it was close. We were in the mix and made it entertaining, and it was really tough to try and keep track of that when my son kept switching over to the Sens game throughout the Oscar night. But because the Sens were having a bit of a rough night, I was able to like push back to like at least we know they're guaranteed winners on the Oscars. What was your favorite moment from the Oscars? Was there anything that you guys really liked, either that you saw last night or that you heard in highlight form this morning?
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't watch the broadcast. It's definitely kind of not my thing, I would say, but I am interested to kind of, I've been interested to see kind of some of the stories out of it, and Everything Everywhere All at Once sounds fantastic. I have not yet to see it, but Brendan Fraser's, you know, return to acting, I do enjoy some of the storylines of people being able to, you know, push through some of their own, you know, personal adversity and get to the Academy Awards stage and accept that Oscar. So that's pretty cool for me.
There were a lot of dream come true moments. For sure. People who had gone a long time without having any success, maybe even homeless, not getting work, having almost given up, and then having their moment last night. So that was kind of, that was probably the most heartwarming part, that you kind of saw that repeated over and over, John Krupe.
100% Sarah Pauly. 100%. She is, give her elevator in the Order of Canada, whatever you have to do, she is something else.
Just a massive talent, you know, started as a child actor. I loved her on that Avonlea show. She was such a little talent. And then usually it goes off the rails, right? From there, most people who get that kind of a start, it's tough to hold on to. She is such an intelligent, talented, gifted person, does it all, writes, directs, produces. And she got the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay, I believe it was.
Yep.
And her speech, I thought, was kind of the most intelligent Canadian sounding speech last night, and love that moment for her. Absolutely. Yeah, that was good. The Canadian connections, there were quite a few of them. I saw a list of how everyone somehow relates back to Canada. There were a few nice moments for Canadians. Brendan Fraser is a dual citizen, I think. Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, his family lived here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lived in Ottawa.
Yeah. So, but I guess that's more and more the thing, though. Like, people are not all gathering to watch what happens on the champagne carpet as they traditionally did. Like, this was absolute must-watch TV back in the day. Whether you were really a huge movie fan or not, there were a few geeks like me who had watched every movie and were completely invested. But everyone else just watched because this was a chance to see the big stars and see what they were wearing and hear them interviewed and get a sense of what they were like. Well, now you see more than your fill of that every single day on social media. So it's just not a thing in the same way anymore, right, Andrew?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We used to have three channels. This was like the only time you used to get to see your big celebrity stars, right? Once a year on the red carpet type thing. But now it has changed so much. Social media, we see our celebrities every day. So it is very much, it's very different. So yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of over the whole format, especially when it starts going like, you know, above 4 hours, 5 hours. But I think there still needs to be some kind of recognition for the great work that obviously these people are doing.
Here's the one moment that everyone has seen, will see, even if they didn't watch the Oscars and they didn't catch all of the champagne carpet moments last night. This highlight is getting a replay. Have a listen.
Hugh Grant, you are a veteran of the Oscars and you've been here a few times. What's your favorite thing about coming to the Oscars?
Fascinating. The whole of humanity is here. It's Vanity Fair.
Oh, it's all about Vanity Fair. Yes, that's where we let loose and have a little bit of fun. What are you most excited to see tonight?
To see?
Yeah, well, I know that you probably watched a few of the movies. Are you excited to see anybody win? Do you have your hopes up for anyone?
Not No one in particular.
Okay, well, what are you wearing tonight then?
Just my suit.
Your suit? Who made your suit? You didn't make it.
I can't remember, my tailor.
That's okay. Yeah. Shout out to the tailor.
Yeah.
So tell me, what does it feel like to be in Glass Onion? It was such an amazing film. I really loved it. I love a thriller. How fun is it to shoot something like that?
Well, I'm barely in it. I'm in it for about 3 seconds.
Yeah, but still, you showed up and you had fun, right?
Almost.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, thank you so much. It was nice to talk.
Okay, so that is Ashley Graham struggling to interview Hugh Grant on the champagne carpet, who obviously was almost immediately not into it. I think this all went wrong when he made the literary reference to Vanity Fair. You know, it's a book and it's about social interactions and shallow gatherings. And he was making a bit of a knock and she thought he was talking about the party. And I think he kind of dismissed her from there. But a lot of people saying she asked the softball questions, others saying Hugh Grant should absolutely expect that on the red or champagne carpet. And he was rude. He did the eye roll at the end of this. What is your take on this one this morning, John Krupe?
Well, I think he should. Didn't he have a scandal with an escort? Or
are you saying there's no leg to stand on for him?
I would have just shot back. And if he continue, I mean, you know, she did what she had to do and be pleasantry and try and get something out of him. But you know, I would have brought it up. Hey, that was that Jay Leno interview. I remember that well.
Yeah, that would have been your last champagne carpet there, Krupe. Yeah, what about you, Andrew? Any thoughts on Hugh Grant?
This idea, just obviously the A turn is very awkward, right? Like, as you know, live TV can be very strange. But I don't know, it's kind of, it had shades of, you know, Billy Bob Billy Bob Thornton on CBC Radio, just kind of being a, I don't know, if you're going to say yes to the interview, don't do this.
Yeah.
Get right. Like, there's a lot of things going on. Maybe she didn't get your reference there, but just, you know, there's a lot of things going on. Don't say yes if you're just going to act like that.
Yeah, the thing is, they're kind of a quick hit, sort of empty interview. And unless you're really skilled at that kind of thing, and there are some people who can do it really well, it tends to be just, you know, the pleasantries. But as soon as you have an athlete or an entertainer who decides they're not playing along with that, you really see just how ridiculous some of those issues are, I think.
Is Hugh Grant still a big, has he still got the marquee attraction?
I still watch Love Actually every year at Christmas. So.
Oh, well, okay.
I think he's very talented. I think he's very smart. I think he should have been a little more polite in that situation. We'll be polite here on our Big 5, 9:20. When we come back with Andrew and John, some of the other issues that are making news this morning. If you were a busker heading into the summer, would you be frustrated with a $50 fee when we're supposed to be revitalizing the market in Ottawa? Why are we doing that? Also, the 3-year anniversary of the outbreak of COVID-19. Is this the last time we have to say COVID around here? This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
This is News.
9:26 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Just a couple more minutes here with our panel. Andrew Pinsent is here, CFRA a weekend host, and John Krupe, our assignment editor down in the CTV Ottawa newsroom. So this move seems like a bit of a strange one, I think, right now, but I'd love to get your take on it. So a $50 charge for 2 hours of space for buskers this summer in certain areas of the Byward Market and elsewhere that are considered, you know, prime territory. The reason for the charge, according to Ottawa Markets, the authority that controls the Byward and Parkdale markets, is because sometimes there's cleanup, there's security that's needed, that this way you can pay for that. And then they're thinking that maybe people will want to book because it's now considered marquee space, because they're going to have someone there to clean up after them. At a time when we're trying to revitalize the core and get people coming downtown, you have buskers now saying, well, that might mean that it's not worth it. We won't pay at all to be there and perform. I think it's kind of part of what you might want going out on the streets to get things going. John Krupe, what do you think about this one? Does this make sense to you?
Well, you know, busker politics is like Quebec politics. It's kind of, it's always in your face. It's always controversial. There must be something afoot here, because remember last week we did the story that the Byward Market was dissolving its BIA.
Yeah.
And it looks like they want to, you say, reinvigorate. I wonder if this is part of their plan to use the word reinvigorate the market again. But that seems quite hefty, because a lot of the, remember the bagpiper? He was being charged $1,000 a day. they can't afford it. And this is not the Busker Festival. These are just buskers who are just taking time, you know, an hour or two in the afternoon or in the morning to entertain us.
Yeah, it seems so, like an... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Andrew, it seems like an odd move at this time. You're trying to draw people back downtown, do whatever you can to make it appealing down here, and then you ding the people that would be performing on the street corner and maybe entertaining some of the people who are walking around.
And very strange on that front, I think, the timing. But also, you already do need some kind of busker's license, right, to busk downtown. So there's already red tape and bureaucracy surrounding that as well. So to add this to it, I don't know why a busker would do this. You're not guaranteed to make any money when you're going out for a couple hours, right? You're paying $50 with no guarantee you're going to get that money back. It really doesn't make any sense. And the idea that, you know, you're going to subsidize, you know, paying to, I guess, clean up around this event because, by, you know, charging the busker, that's kind of bizarre. Get some volunteers to clean that up, get something else to do that, because that's to make the performer kind of take that on is a little bizarre.
Just real quick, before we let you go, an anniversary that I guess we don't really need to celebrate, maybe just mark by looking around and realizing that things are pretty good generally. I was out skiing in Gatineau yesterday and just lots of people out, a packed parking lot in the sunshine. 3-year anniversary of the start of COVID-19 this weekend. You probably talked about it on the air on Sunday, Andrew. Just real quick, your thought on this, is it lovely to be past the point where we're talking about COVID every single day on the airwaves?
It definitely has been a nice change of pace, and the pain seems to be somewhat lower from everybody that's been feeling it out there since we've got our vaccine. But, you know, even talking this weekend, kind of looking ahead, we weren't really prepared this time around, right? So what happens the next time this happens, making sure we're kind of prepared. That's where I'm kind of focused on. I'm glad we're past it. I'm really glad, but kind of making sure we're prepared for the next one.
Yeah, hopefully it was not all for naught and we actually learned some lessons out of this one. John Krupe, last thought to you.
Have we flattened the curve?
Just give us a week or two. Give us a week or two. Flatten the curve, head it off. Yeah. John, Andrew, thank you both very much. Appreciate talking to both of you on a Monday morning, a tough Monday morning for some of us getting up, a lovely, relaxed Monday morning for a lot of you on March break. We will talk a little bit more about the Oscars with someone who is a little more of an expert on movie picks coming up. Peter Emiliotis will join us on that. Already people are texting in this morning. We're going to ask you what your favorite moment was at the Oscars coming up in just a little bit. As well, the Ravens, both teams winning for Carleton University, some other great sports moments as well. Flair Airlines, what's going on there? Those planes being seized. We'll bring you up to speed on that. And we'll check in with Matt Scooby, who's on the air in Toronto this week. He'll tell you what he's doing. That's all coming up. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
This is...
Hey, my question for you today is...
Only one question.
Quick question.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
9:35 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good Monday morning to you. Let's talk a little Oscars. Did you watch last night on a Monday morning? Are you following the conversation because you sat glued to your TV? Or do you think the Oscars have kind of passed us by? Not must-watch TV. Did you dip in a little, get a highlight? And if so, did you have a favorite moment at the Oscars or a favorite cringe moment? Something you love, something you didn't love, or did you just not watch at all? Would love to get your thoughts on the Oscars on the Monday morning after entertainment's biggest show. 580-580, we'll share some of your thoughts. And coming up, we're going to talk about some of the winners with Peter Emiliotis in just a moment here. This is Ottawa at Work.
You're listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
If anyone in this theater commits an act of violence at any point during the show, you will be awarded the Oscar for Best Actor and permitted to give a 19-minute long speech.
Jimmy Kimmel, the host of the Oscars this year, I think you know what he is referring to there. Is we're joined now by Peter Emiliotis, a.k.a. Petey Beats of Popternative, to talk a little Oscar talk. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Patricia.
Okay, well, let's start there maybe with Jimmy Kimmel. And I think I'm asking people this morning, 580, did you watch? Do you still consider the Oscars to be must-watch television? I think it was pretty obvious that we were not going to have the same post-Oscar Day discussion that we had last year when everyone was talking about the Oscars because of that moment between Will Smith and Chris Rock. A few people wondering whether Jimmy Kimmel would reference it going into last night's show. He did over and over. What did you think about the way that was handled? And what did you think about Jimmy Kimmel as host? Because I thought he was just kind of okay and pretty safe overall, but I'd be interested to get your take and how he handled what is one of the toughest TV gigs out there.
Well, I find it interesting. He has hosted before when it has been one of those Oscars everyone talks about. I don't know if you remember a few years back where they said that La La Land won Best Picture, but it was actually Moonlight. He was the host for that one. So I think he is basically, he wasn't there last year, but he's not shy to moments at big kind of award ceremonies. I think he did a very good job, and I think he basically... It's funny because he mentioned it at the end of his opening monologue. He kind of focused on all the incredible movies this year. And the fact I really liked that he also addressed that, finally, this was like the first calendar year where, you know, we were able to go see all these movies in the theaters. Because of the pandemic, it was impossible. But this was the first year where all these movies were able to go see in the theaters, which was important. I think he did a very good job. I love at the end of the Oscars as well. That he went to like a board and took a marker and wrote Oscars without any incidents, and he put a one next to it, and that's how it signed off. I will say, to add to what you just said about you thinking it was okay, I think the Oscars got a lot of flack last year for not televising a lot of the awards, a lot of the, you know, smaller awards. They did a lot of them before the broadcast. So I think for time, he just wasn't doing as much as he usually did, because they had to announce 23 awards. So I think the pacing for that was good, where he had his opening monologue, he had some bits here and there. But I think what you're talking about is he wasn't there as much as I thought he was going to be, if you know what I mean by that.
Yeah. I mean, the pacing is tough. I like that they said they were just going to do them all on TV, because everyone should get their moment, instead of deciding that some, obviously fans want to see the acting awards and whatnot, but instead of deciding that one has more weight than the other, and it also allows me to tick off as I'm following along in my Oscar pool, whether I got one right or wrong, didn't win this year. But I always find the pacing interesting, because it seems like they let the early speech goers go longer, and then they start to panic at the midway point, and then they have those really awkward moments where you have two people going up who both want to speak and say something, and the second person gets cut off just as they're about to start, and you know, it just looks so awful on the biggest night of their life.
You have, it's always a collaborative, so you have like the two producers or directors, one speaks a little longer, and then they're cut for time, and that other person doesn't. I think that's the thing that always happens at these award ceremonies. But I do think that there were some powerful speeches where I think at one point it's like you got to just let them go and go, right? I think a lot of them know about that. You know what I mean? They become longer.
It was a powerful and an emotional night for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Of course, 7 awards, including Best Picture. And when you talk about emotional moments, that Best Supporting Actor Oscar early, that was just, you know, that was years of wanting it, not being able to make it happen, hanging in there, and then finally getting rewarded. And that was genuine emotion up there on that stage.
It was unbelievable. And I do have to say, you know, one of the things I wanted to address is Everything Everywhere All at Once. This was a film that everyone was talking about, you know, especially right before the Golden Globes was picking up a lot of speed and everything. We knew this film was going to be a front runner and in the race for all the big awards. We knew it. I am just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable to me that you look at this film, and there were other films as well, Patricia, that they were in a race for a lot of categories. And I find it interesting that this film won a lot of the big, I mean, it won 3 of the 4 acting categories. Mm-hmm. It won, you know, a lot of things. And then all these other movies that it was up against, Banshees of Inisherin, Tar, The Fablemans, Elvis, none of those movies won a single Oscar yesterday, Patricia. Isn't that interesting?
It was a tough night. I just watched Fablemans yesterday. I really enjoyed that one. But
I just find it interesting because it could have went either way and everything. And, you know, Brendan Fraser, some Canadian content there, he wins, you know, Best Actor for The Whale, beats out Austin Butler. That was a race all year. You know what I mean? And I just find it interesting that some amazing films got no awards yesterday.
I had picked,
got many nominations.
I had picked Cate Blanchett for best actress, and then as Michelle Yeoh was winning, I thought, oh, I'm pretty sure I picked her. I must have, and then no, I didn't. Why not? But they kind of like all swung their way towards the end. But let's play a little clip of a couple of those people accepting their awards, starting with, as you mentioned, the Canadian Content Connection, Brendan Fraser, who again went through some really, really tough times in his career after having some success early and then dipping down and then coming full fruition to this moment right here.
I just want to say thank you for this acknowledgement, because it couldn't be done without my cast. It's been like I've been on a diving expedition on the bottom of the ocean, and the air on the line to the surface is on a launch being watched over by some people in my life.
Brendan Fraser almost had trouble breathing through and delivering his speech, but he talked about having, not that things had come easy, but having a certain facility at a certain point when you think those roles are going to come and you don't really appreciate what your career is, and then it all kind of disappears for a little while, and then getting back into the role of his life. He was incredible in The Whale. What did you think of his speech and how he handled himself?
I think it was just emotional from start to finish. You even see him right when they're doing the nominees, you know that it's just an emotional ride for him as well. I'm so happy for Brendan Fraser. I find this was a movie that premiered at TIFF last year, and everybody was talking about it, saying that as soon as they saw it at TIFF, this was going to be a discussion for the Oscars for Brendan Fraser. It was one of those, like, you got out of the theater and you knew he was going to be a discussion for it. I do have to say, you know, adding to that Canadian content very quickly for The Whale, I do find in terms of best hair and makeup, The Whale won that, and Montreal native Adrian Moreau is part of that team who won the Oscar for that as well with Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I think that was a bit of an unexpected win in terms of who they were picking for best makeup. I didn't see that one being as one of the front runners, so that was a really, really nice moment.
I found it interesting too, you know, you because like, I also find it interesting, you see, you know, all these, like, they put the clips, right, of the movies during the nominees, right, and you see, like, Elvis or, like, Avatar, right, and you're like, oh, wow, like, that looks amazing, you know what I mean? And you're kind of like, that's going to win, and then you see another clip, you're like, oh, that could win, right? It's one of those.
But I love that they talked about in the little blurb, I guess, as he was going up to accept that makeup award, about transforming Brendan Fraser and without limiting his facial expression and his ability to convey all the emotion that he did in that role. So, I mean, that was a tricky task for sure. And I guess
absolutely,
they succeeded very well. So
he did a very good job. And then very quickly, two other quick Canadian content. Sarah Polley wins for Best Adapted Screenplay for Woman Talking. And Daniel Roelher, director of the documentary Navalny, about the Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who is actually imprisoned right now. So a big night also for Canadians at the Oscars.
Sarah Polley, I thought, was absolutely a highlight. I absolutely loved her speech. Michelle Yeoh winning Best Actress as well. Her speech was kind of wonderful, warm, ticked a lot of boxes. Obviously, it was a huge night for Asian actors and that community. But she also spoke to all the women watching as well. This is Michelle accepting her award.
For all the little boys and girls who look like me watching tonight, this is a beacon of hope and possibilities. This is proof that dreams dream big and dreams do come true. And ladies, don't let anybody tell you you are ever past your prime. Never give up.
A lovely shout out from a 60-year-old actress. Of course, Jamie Lee Curtis winning as a Best Supporting Actress as well. So some older actresses who are winning in those acting categories, which was lovely. And and that was a shot at an American commentator.
Well,
about women being past their
quickly,
prime.
Very quickly, too, some history as well with Michelle Yeoh. I mean, she becomes the first Asian to win Best Actress at the Oscars, but this one is going to blow your mind. She's the only second woman, she's the second woman of color to win Best Actress at the Oscars. And the first to do that was Halle Berry, who gave her the award.
Oh, yeah. Nice. And then they had Harrison Ford giving out the award for Best Picture, where there was a little bit of a reunion moment there, too.
Yeah, with Kyu Hoo Kwan, absolutely. And then he becomes the first Asian winner for Best Supporting Actor in 38 years, second overall. And then Guillermo del Toro, very quickly, Patricia, is the first person to win because he won Best Animated for Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio on Netflix. He's the first person to win Best Director, Best Picture, and Best Animated Feature in Oscar history, which is amazing. So a lot of history yesterday.
Love that. And I actually love the music, too. I know some people were very critical of some of the audio or performances. I thought Lady Gaga was amazing in her sort of stripped-down, intimate performance. I thought Rihanna was wonderful.
Yeah, that performance of Not Too from RRR, the Indian film, was
incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
The dance number, that was just amazing. All right, excellent. Good stuff. A pleasure to talk to you on the morning after, Peter. I hope you get some nap time today, and thanks for your insight.
Anytime. Thanks, Patricia. Thanks for having me.
That's Peter Romeliotis, a.k.a. Petey Beats. Popternative is where you can catch him. 9:53 on News Talk 580 CFR. I'm seeing your texts. Would love to see more of them. What was your favorite moment of the Oscars? Or did you just not bother to watch anymore? 580. What the Sens were up to while the Oscars were on last night. We'll get into that in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Possession, change up their ball screen coverage.
Chadwick has 12 boards, but 0 of 11 from the field is a big three from Pokrnić. Timeout Gales.
It was a huge weekend for the Carleton Ravens men's and women's basketball team, sweeping the U Sports National Championships in Atlantic Canada on Sunday, becoming the first university to win both titles during the same season since 1985. The Ravens men's team beating St. FX in double overtime, while the Ravens women's team stormed back from a 5-point halftime deficit to beat Queen's University. This is the second time in school history that the Carleton Ravens are women's national championships, beating the Queen's Gales 71-59. Big, big weekend. Danny Sinclair is on the line, women's head coach of the Carleton Ravens team. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Congratulations. First of all, are you still sort of taking it all in this morning?
Yeah, I mean, in a little bit of shock, to be honest. I mean, so much preparation goes into the week, you know, into the tournament, and, you know, just still processing it. But, you know, so much pride and you know, happy for our players and for our staff, and can't wait to get home back to Ottawa.
How's the voice this morning, Danny?
Oh, it's better actually this morning than it was last night. I literally could not make a sound last night.
A little bit of yelling, a little bit of screaming for sure happening as well. So tell me how you were feeling heading into this game against Queens. Who was the favorite? How good did you feel about your team and whether you guys had what it took to get it done?
Yeah, I mean, we were confident going in, but, you know, Queens obviously is a very good team and pretty evenly matched. We had beaten them twice, and we knew it was going to be tough to beat them for a third time. You know, and they came out strong. We had trouble in the first half containing them, and you know, I think we showed some toughness in the second half, especially defensively, and were able to come out with a win.
Who really impressed you on your squad?
Well, I think Callie obviously stands out. I mean, she's our leader, and you know, she ended up being named MVP of the tournament. She does so much for us, but huge performances from, you know, Dorcas Buiza defensively, Emma Kiesekamp, who defended an All-Canadian and kept her to no points. And then just a great team effort. We have a lot of young players that play important minutes for us. And you know, so, you know, really important performances from a lot of people.
Callie was in that highlight that we played off the top. So after your win out east, as a team, do you go right into celebration mode? Do you gather to watch the men and see how they fare?
Yeah, I mean, the girls We caught wind from some of our parents that the game was close and then it went into overtime. So after cutting down the net, they all gathered on the court and they were watching on phones, and you could hear them sort of screaming and cheering for the men. And you know, there's a lot of closeness between the two programs, both with the players and the staff. So we'll be very excited to see them when we get back home.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because obviously in this country, we often do not focus enough of a spotlight on university sports. It's certainly different from what it is in the States. But if any team has had some attention, it's probably been the Carleton men's team over the years with a bit of a dynasty. Has it felt like your team sometimes is playing in the shadow of that team, or has it been inspiring to see that kind of success for the basketball program overall?
It's inspiring for sure. I think, you know, women across the board should get more attention in sport and you know, but within our walls, there's a lot of support, and especially with our men's team. I mean, Taffy, he built the women's program to what it was and won a championship, and he is still very invested in how our program does. You know, as are we of them. So within our walls, there doesn't feel like, you know, the men get more attention than we do. And we understand, you know, that their success is our success and vice versa. So it's been really great to be a part of.
It will be incredible when you return to share that moment together. But tell me about the cutting down the net tradition. What does that involve?
Well, it's, you know, it's a nice opportunity for each of the players and staff to have a moment, and it's pretty cool. I mean, I was able to win a championship as a player and do that, but it's kind of cool as the head coach. You get to be the last one to take that down. So, you know, it hasn't really sunk in, but that was one of those moments where, you know, you get to be up there and look down and just see how proud all the parents of our players are and just how happy our girls are for the work they put in.
And you really understand it when you've had that moment yourself as a university player, and then you get to repeat it as the head coach, just in bigger, broader fashion. And it is a celebration for everyone, the parents, the students, and the entire school. Danny, I hope you have a good off day today and get a chance to rest the voice. And thanks so much for coming on to share a little bit of the excitement with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Danny Sinclair is the head coach of the women's team, the Carleton Ravens, women and men both winning national championships on the weekend. 10:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We're talking about winners generally, and the Oscar winners and losers. Angela Bassett obviously was expecting to win last night. You could see it in her face. There were some interesting moments. What was your favorite, either moment of celebration, cringeworthy moment, best dress on the carpet? Would love to hear from some of you on that. 580-580. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little something closer to home. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
This is Welcome back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Stop the clear cutting! Stop the clear cutting! Stop the clear cutting!
They've gone ahead and taken a piece of land where a forest has been for more than 50 years, and they clear cut it. A lot of animals and plants live there.
So this was a protest happening on the weekend. Ottawa residents speaking out against plans to cut down a large swath of trees in the rural southeast end of the city near the Tewin lands. And you heard from Monica Brewer there, who is a Carlsbad Springs resident, who was one of the people upset about what is going on there, saying they've taken a piece of land that a forest has been there for 50 years and clear cut it. There are a lot of animals and plants that live there. Do not believe that clear cutting is the right thing to do. William Van Geest for the Ecology Ottawa team is one of the people who organized this protest and is on the line now. Good morning, William. So catch us up to speed on what this situation is. What was promised and what has since happened, and why are you not pleased with what's going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, word on this clear cutting first broke mid-February. CJRO, the local station there in Carlsbad Springs, broke the story about all this clear cutting. In the interim, you know, the city, first of all, issued a stop work order about 5 days later, so a bit of a lag there, and subsequently said that they lifted the stop work order under an exemption, they say, from the tree protection bylaw, which, you know, you would expect would protect against this sort of clear cutting. So, you know, as far as anyone can tell, this is legal to be, you know, just destroying all the trees on this sort of 70-hectare plot of land. So, you know, I don't think, you know, it's tough to watch. So particularly the residents of Carlsbad Springs, but I think folks with ecological interests across the city are you know, perplexed and outraged, frankly, that this kind of destruction would take place, you know, particularly in a climate emergency, in a biodiversity emergency. You know, it doesn't really make sense to be, you know, undertaking this level of destruction.
I mean, it seemed that there had been an attempt at some cooperation and collaboration, the Algonquins of Ontario owning the land, working with Taggart to develop this community. It's going to be a massive suburb that's going in there, right there or nearby. Did this feel like it sort of came out of the blue that they were given permission to do this?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't just the fact that it was out of the blue. You know, residents reported, you know, the work taking place under cover of night. The city confirmed that, you know, the landowners had not secured a permit for the cutting. There was no consultation with the community, is what the Carlsbad Springs folks tell us. You know, even while earlier in the process, they said we'll be consulting the community all the way along. You know, the story is changing a little bit. Originally, they were saying that they were clearing the land because of the derecho, and then there was talk about the an agricultural exemption. And, you know, if you chat with the folks in Carlsbad Springs, they'll tell you, well, this is kind of the first that we've heard of any sort of farming. And, of course, neither party in the Taywin development, you know, is known for agriculture. And so, you know, it's perplexing and a little bit, you know, problematic that the target is shifting. And again, to be, you know, doing this cutting under cover of night, it you know, doesn't really add up.
The agriculture exemption means you're allowed to cut trees down without replanting them because you have plans to use the land for some kind of farm use.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. That's right. And that's, of course, a normal practice for farming, right? If you want land, you need to take down a few trees. 70 hectares seems, you know, not quite a match with you know, the spirit of that exemption.
So what was the reaction to the rally on Sunday? Do you feel like you're being seen and heard? Do you feel like this is just symbolic and whatever is going to happen there is going to happen?
And certainly we're up against a formidable, you know, force or adversary in the sense that, you know, the landowners are not small organizations, and in the city, you know, if the city has given the okay on this, that's, you know, that's a tough hill for opponents to climb. We do feel though that this is the first step in opposition of many future steps. So, you know, given the opposition that we saw, I think yesterday. And the outrage that we've kind of heard across the city from various corners, I really don't think that our folks are going to let this go down with a fight. And, you know, another aspect to consider is that, you know, the tree protection bylaw came into effect in 2021 at the beginning of the year. And this was really, you know, a first test of the tree protection bylaw. And I think, like, common sense would dictate that, you know, just clear cutting without any permit and kind of dubious circumstances, this should be, you know, a slam dunk for the tree protection bylaw. You know, this should be prevented and you know, those clear cutting held accountable. It failed, the tree protection bylaw. So we're certainly hoping not only to prevent further destruction in this area, but also prevent other clear cutting elsewhere in the city. You know, if, again, if something this egregious can't be prevented by the tree protection bylaw, well, what can, you know?
Is there a way for this subdivision to go in and go up and do it in a way that there is enough green space that's allotted that it would satisfy all parties? Is there a way to sort of have a happy conclusion here, or is it inevitably sort of a win-loss situation?
Yeah, I mean, in large part, I would leave that question up to the folks in Carlsbad Springs. I will say, you know, there was a great deal of opposition to the Taywin development in the first place, you know, given that there are no services, services are relatively scant that far out in delivering, you know, services on the scale that a development of that size would need. This is pretty problematic, you know, and so, you know, a lot of people are opposed to the sprawl that this sort of development, you know, constitutes. So, you know, I think there was a lot of talk about the sustainability of the proposed development. It's tough to see how they could make this sustainable. Green space in particular, you know, if this is one of their first acts to destroy this much of the forest and the ecosystem, again, it's really tough to see how sustainability will really figure in this development.
How does the tree protection bylaw work? As you say, it came out in 2021. I'm reading comments from city staff saying that they will continue to monitor the situation, make sure the developer holds up its commitments. That tree protection bylaw allegedly comes with the potential to be fined up to $100,000. How does it work? Why was it put in place? What is it meant to do? And have we seen it work at all yet? Or as you say, this is one of the first big tests. Is it maybe just not going to do the job it was designed to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's the fear, right? As I understand it, this is really the first main go at something where the tree protection bylaw should have, you know, snapped into place and prevent this. My understanding is that the kind of basic, mechanism is that, you know, any tree that has a diameter of 10 centimeters or more needs a permit for its removal, except in I think it's about 7 or 8 exempted cases, agriculture being one of them. And so, you know, this should have, it's supposed to be a quite tight bylaw to prevent any sort of destruction of mature trees. The fact that it didn't, it didn't come into force in the way that anyone would expect is certainly troubling. It's supposed to protect against exactly this sort of destruction.
All right, William, thank you very much. Appreciate your time and your perspective on this morning.
Thank you, Patricia.
William Van Gies is with the Ecology Ottawa team, rather. And again, this is the situation happening out in the Carlsbad Springs area. This is the rural southeast end of the city near these Taywin lands where there has been some clear cutting happening. A rally was held yesterday from residents who are concerned about that and how that is being handled. This suburb is going to be big. It's expected to house as many as 45,000 new residents when it's all done. But there has been some sort of ongoing controversy and back and forth about how Taggart is managing to negotiate what will happen on those lands with the owners, who are the Algonquins of Ontario. They want to respect the values of those in that community, they say, but we'll watch and see where this goes and how this develops and what the City of Ottawa has to say about this as we move further with it. 10:47 here on News Talk 580 CFRA. It is the Monday of March break. How does the weather look for your staycation plans? We're going to get into that in just a moment. A little bit of snow on the way. There was a light dusting on the ground this morning, but the drive-in was pretty easy. As well, we are asking you what your thoughts are on the Oscars last night. A lot of you did watch, or at least watch the red carpet. Lots of thoughts on some of the costumes. Colleen says, hi, Patricia. Oscars best, Brendan Fraser and Jamie Lee Curtis. Worst, Hugh Grant interview and Angela Bassett not being happy for Jamie Lee Curtis win. She was largely touted as being the front runner going into that award category. And some people said she looked angry. I don't think she looked angry. She didn't do kind of the fake celebration for Jamie Lee Curtis in the moment. She was pretty stone-faced when they showed her on the cameras. Hugh Grant, yeah, a lot of talk about Hugh Grant Someone texting in saying he received a lot of flack for his red carpet interview. I watched it on YouTube. 99% of the comments were in favor of him, saying the interviewer was asking really basic questions. Why can't the Oscar people... this is nice from Bill. Why can't the Oscar people get you to do these interviews? Okay, that's sweet, Bill. She was struggling for sure in that interview. He was not making it any easier, though, and you don't expect to get rocket science type questions on the red or champagne carpet, but it was certainly cringy, whichever side of that you're supporting. I think there's maybe some blame to be thrown in both directions on that one. 1048 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl. 10 after 10 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. It is the Monday of March break. It's a big travel day. We're going to talk about travel here in just a sec. It's also the Monday morning after the Oscars. For those who did watch, we're getting your take on that last night. Anne says, hi, Patricia. You know what I really loved about last night's Oscars? It was classy and everyone was humble. Rihanna's performance was my highlight. She was incredible. Nicholas says, I like to check out the red/white carpet dresses. Yeah, they have to confuse it. We can't just say on the red carpet anymore with that champagne carpet they rolled out last night. Nicholas says, best was Cate Blanchett and Jessica Chastain. Not impressed this year, but at least not vulgar as undressed dresses at Grammys. Okay. All right. So some slightly more classier items. Hey, Patricia, haven't watched the Oscars since George Clooney's complete arrogant acceptance speech back in the 2000s. A bunch of elitists telling us common folk how to live. I doubt I'll ever tune in again. Sandra Oh's outfit getting some applause as well, and lots more. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But we want to talk about this travel situation as well. A bit of a curveball for people who maybe had booked a discount flight this week or in future days with this happening. Flair Airlines. Over the weekend, the ultra-low-cost carrier canceling flights due to what they said were maintenance issues. But Flair is in a commercial dispute right now with a U.S.-based company that seized four of its planes over recent days. And we're not exactly sure what the connection is to the canceled flights, the seized planes. But what is going on for Flair? If you are about to book or have booked on Flair, how nervous are you right now? John Graddick is here. We want to talk to him about this and get his take. There was also the Sunwing acquisition happening. John, how are you doing this morning?
It's been a busy morning, Patricia. I'm doing okay.
Okay, so what does this mean from Flair, first of all?
There's some chinks in the armor that are showing up on Flair's business practices. And I think that's of concern. That should be of concern. Probably more of concern to the guys who are issuing the license for Flair to operate, and that's being Transport Canada, that they're probably watching this thing fairly closely to see what or how Flair gets itself out of this mess that they're in. My view is that as a going business concern, you have to make sure that you are in good standing with your suppliers. In this case, the supplier that they're dealing with does not seem to be very cooperative with Flair and have taken measures to kind of reduce the number of assets that have been committed to support Flair's operating plan. So these four airplanes represent 20% of Flair's fleet, which is not an insignificant amount.
No.
And then for Flair to come back on the weekend and say, well, we've got three airplanes sitting around that weren't doing anything and we're going to get a fourth one today on Monday. Sounds a little interesting to me. Where were these airplanes before, and why weren't they flying it at the spring break?
So, is it typical that they lease planes in a situation like this? They don't actually own the planes.
Oh yeah, most ultra low cost carriers, I think for the most part, except for Lynx, which is financed and funded by a U.S. Firm. For the most part, in terms of their assets. I think most ULCCs in Canada start off with leased airplanes because you don't have to commit, each one of these airplanes is $80 to $100 million. So these are not cheap airplanes, and you've got to have deep pockets in order for you to buy it. So they don't have that level of cash in the bank. They don't have that level of investment support. So they typically go to the lease market to get the airplane supply.
I mean, all of us would love to travel in a luxurious way at a discount budget, not very realistic. But I think bottom line, what you want is an airline that is reliable, that can get you someplace when it says it will, basically on time. That's been a bit tricky through the these peak periods and the adjustment to travel after the pandemic. But with Flair right now, if you, like me, had been considering booking your child on a one-way ticket to meet you somewhere because it was so much cheaper on Flair, would you even consider it right now, booking with them, or would that be a no-brainer to avoid them until they have this sorted out?
I would always have a plan B and a plan C just in case they decide to cancel in the short term. Get another carrier. Has your backup, get a fully refundable ticket that if Flair does in fact operate, then there's no problem. At least you get your money back from your plan B or plan C place.
Right.
But it's important that you really, you know, when you're booking on Flair or any of the other ULCCs, that, you know, given, you know, the current state of the economy and the fact that these guys need, you know, 100% load factor just to break even on the flight, you know, that tells me that there, you know, we've got fares in the marketplace, as you know, that, you know, are rock bottom fares. We haven't seen fares this low in years. And these guys are trying to get people off the couch to fly. And, you know, that means you have to price it very aggressively. And when you do that, you're not making a lot of money. So how long are you going to sustain yourself and make some money to pay for the airplanes, the fuel and the crews? Is questionable.
Whether or not, as a customer, you decide it's worth taking advantage of those really low fares often has to do with the luxury of time, I think, if you're not on a hard timeline to get somewhere, because quite often it seems the discount carriers will offer you a flight. Say the ones that fly down to Florida, for example, they'll offer one day, not the next, and maybe a flight a couple of days later. So if there is any issue with your flight, it's not like they have three others going out that day they can rebook you on. You could potentially be looking at a two-day delay to get where you're going. So it's already a bit of a roll of the dice and a risk when you're booking with some of those guys.
Right. And, yeah, you know, you've seen the stories over the weekend where people were being offered flights a week out from a departure. And when you have a one-week school break, good luck. That doesn't mean anything to you. So you're out of luck. And so you have to basically look at trying to get compensation from the carrier, which could take a while.
Yeah.
To get the refund back.
Quickly, with all the issues with Sunwing and now the WestJet acquisition there, is there anything the consumer should be hyper aware of in that situation?
Well, the good news on that one is that Sunwing is still going to be around, albeit probably under another brand. So, you know, the airline will not have a layoff and will not cease operations. The operations will continue. Probably under a WestJet brand. The bad news is the prices will go up. Now, that's going to be, you know, you're going to reduce some competition. Sunwing's been very aggressive in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Pricing-wise, WestJet's not as aggressive. So the odds are that our prices for Sun Vacations next winter will be coming up.
And price matters. You keep talking to people saying, well, why would you book Sunwing when you've heard they've had all these issues in the past? Like, well, it was so much cheaper than the other. Sometimes you just want to take a chance to be able to get away and have that beach vacation. All right, John, thank you very much for your thoughts. Appreciate it.
All right. All right, Patricia. Have a great day. Take care.
John Graddick is with McGill University's in their aviation management program there and has worked with Air Canada as well. 10:18 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, a huge weekend for Carleton Ravens basketball, both the men's and the women's team winning national championships on the weekend. We will talk to the head coach of the women's team coming up in just a moment as well. Your thoughts on the Oscars, if you watched, what was the best or the cringiest moment for you? And if you're sexing up.
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
Uh-huh. 10:53 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Happy Monday to you. It is March break. It was a bit of a lighter drive in today. I think a lot of people taking this week off or part of this week with the kids out of school, maybe enjoying a little sleep in on the Monday morning after the Oscars, on the Monday morning after we lost an hour of sleep on the Saturday night. You need some sunshine maybe to help you feel awake. We do have a little bit of it this week. We've got a couple of nice days in the mix. We just want to touch base quickly on how your March break looks if you are planning a staycation, if you have not taken off for sunshine. David Phillips is on the line, senior climatologist from Environment Canada. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, Patricia. It looks like a good week to decide things. I mean, what you can plan the week based on today's weather for the whole week. You know, this time last year, you couldn't. I mean, you went from slush to almost sweat. You lost all of your snow. You had more rain than snow. It was the mud season, the flood season. This year, I mean, it's more like maple syrup weather. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do recreation snow skiing or tobogganing or skating, hey, I think you've got the weather to do it. No major storm in the way. We'll see a bit of snow today and tomorrow. But, you know, when you figure after 36 hours of this light snow off and on, you might end up with maybe 6 to 10 centimeters of snow. That's nothing for Ottawa. Lots of sunshine this week. And then, hey, some system at the end of the week, but that's too far away to even diagnose it. So mm-hmm. My sense is it's pretty uniform. It's that temperatures are melting during the day, freezing at night. So I think it's ideal. As I say, you can decide Monday what you want to do on Thursday, and you can be sure that the weather will cooperate.
The thing about that little bit of snow coming down today and tomorrow, this time of year, you're not really thinking shoveling unless you get to really serious totals. And I did not take any time off, but I get a nice little break in the middle of the day. So I'm looking at meeting my son on a ski hill. I have a feeling it's going to be very busy here in Ottawa, maybe on the Wednesday and Thursday, because both of those days, it looks like we're getting very nice mild temperatures and sunshine coming off a little bit of fresh snow, which will be coating the hills, which should make it really, really nice.
You describe it so well, Patricia. I mean, that is what the snow, this little amount of snow, there's no shoveling it. What nature giveth, it can also taketh away with those kind of warm temperatures. So this will just whiten it up and make all those, you know, the dungy snows at the end of the driveway just nice, bright, and white. And when that sun comes out, boy, you'll need those goggles on because a lot of reflection. So, you know, I mean, a March break to have kind of winter staying on, but in a kind of way, I think it's really positive. I mean, this is the same system that we're getting today and tomorrow that caused, you know, wicked weather out west. And so it's pretty pale by it reached eastern Ontario. And so it's just kind of a freshen up, know the season you're still in. And I think that the whole week looks pretty positive.
Yeah, nothing too crazy to get in the way of travel plans either. And just before I let you go, we talked about how we wanted this sort of slow warm up. It's good for the melt. It's good for the potential of flooding. How does it look beyond this week? Because I'm looking ahead to the last thing I see on my screen here is zero on Sunday. So it doesn't look like there's any huge warm up on the way. But if you look at the long range, are you seeing any sign of getting to above normal temperatures?
I don't, Patricia. I see it kind of normal, seasonable. I always think that's the best weather for the most. I know we want, psychologically, we want, we want to go from winter to summer almost. But, you know, spring is a season you've got, it's a transition season. And we think spring is going to play out in its normal course. We see for the next month, I would say temperatures look a little colder for Toronto, but kind of near normal for Ottawa. So not a rush to spring. And hey, spring skiing, there's nothing better than that.
All right, David Phillips, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Okay, Patricia, bye-bye.
David Phillips, a senior climatologist at Environment Canada. Spring skiing, lovely. Spring hockey is lovely, too. There has been a push, obviously, on the part of the Ottawa Senators to stay in the mix down the stretch to keep playoff hopes alive. They are not dead yet, but it was a tough weekend for the Ottawa Senators on this Western road trip. In case you missed it, in case you had trouble staying up late, here's what happened on the weekend.
Here's Coleman at the line, and he takes a hit from Giroux. Back and puts it in front of the net. Scores! Stützle, the beneficiary of a turnover by the Flames, and it's a one-goal game.
Well, what a huge break that is for the Senators.
Brady Tkachuk comes in, misses on his check. Back to the point it comes. Here's Holden. Sends it in, scores! Holden through a maze.
Well, all of a sudden, 4:16 left on the clock. It's a two-goal game.
A couple of the positive moments in what was a tough weekend. Stützle with the lone goal in a 5-1 loss to the Flames. The Senators lost to Vancouver the night before. That was Nick Holden's goal that you heard there. Back with goaltending trouble as well. But four key games coming up, two of them at the Canadian Tire Centre. They have one more against Edmonton before they close out their road trip. They are 6 points behind Pittsburgh and the New York Islanders for the final wild card playoff spot. And now G.J. Smith, of course, being asked all the time why the Senators not working hard when they know what is at stake here. And he commented after the Calgary game on the poor discipline on the ice.
Yeah, and tripping, stick penalties, not physical penalties. And, you know, we can yell at the ref or whatever all we want. Maybe one of them, two of them maybe are arguable, but those ones at the end are penalties. And you know, we had an opportunity 6-on-4 with 2 minutes to go to narrow the game to one, and we end up in the box.
Claude Giroux also saying that the Sens need to do a better job of keeping out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get momentum when you're killing penalties, and I'm not too sure how many we took, but we got to do a better job of staying out of the box.
So it'll be a big week on Thursday. The Senators will be back home to host the defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche at Canadian Tire Center. And you can bet the house will be full on Saturday when the Sens host the Maple Leafs for the latest round in the Battle of Ontario. Will they still be in the mix, in the thick of it, by the weekend? It'll be fun to watch for sure. 11 o'clock here on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, we're going to talk to Matt Scooby, who is not here in Ottawa. In fact, he's in Toronto doing something a little different. We're going to tell you what he is up to in case you didn't, you know, maybe see a little smidge of it this morning as well. Katie Griffin has the noon show for us today. She will be here. And right after the 11 o'clock news, Graham Richardson will stop by as well. Another chance to win your opportunity to join us for Taste of Ottawa on April 20th. Our code word coming up in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hugh Grant, you are a veteran of the Oscars, and you've been here a few times. What's your favorite thing about coming to the Oscars?
Well, it's fascinating. The whole of humanity is here. It's Vanity Fair.
Oh, it's all about Vanity Fair. Yes, that's where we let loose and have a little bit of fun. What are you most excited to see tonight?
To see?
Yeah, well, I know that you probably watched a few of the movies. Are you excited to see anybody win? Do you have your hopes up for anyone?
No one in particular.
Okay, well, what are you wearing tonight then?
Just my suit.
Your suit? Who made your suit? You didn't make it.
I can't remember my tailor.
That's okay. Yeah. Shout out to the tailor.
Yeah.
So tell me, what does it feel like to be in Glass Onion? It was such an amazing film. I really loved it. I love a thriller. How fun is it to shoot something like that?
Well, I'm barely in it. I'm in it for about 3 seconds.
Yeah, but still, you showed up and you had fun, right?
Almost.
Okay, all right. Okay. Well, thank you so much. It was nice to talk.
Nice to talk to you, says Ashley Graham to Hugh Grant. That is probably the most talked about moment of the Oscars. It happened before the Oscars. Graham Richardson is here.
I didn't watch a minute of it.
I know you're not allowed to watch.
No,
you've
I'm not.
Long been banned by your wife from watching because you spoil it for her with your inane comments. So instead we bring you on here to make those comments.
She was away too and I didn't watch it.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, this is me and I know what your take is going to be on this. I love the movies, and this was a bit of an off year for me. I didn't watch all of the Best Picture nominees. I watched quite a few of them, but I like the focus on the movies. I'm not a fashion person. I thought Angela Bassett's purple dress was absolutely gorgeous. I would have loved to see her win in that. Beyond that, I didn't really notice what people were wearing for the most part. That's not part of my deal, but I love movies and books and whatnot.
Yes.
So I do feel like those red carpet, champagne carpet interview situations are very, very tricky. They're quick hits. People are focused on other things. They're being pulled in different directions. It's tough to do.
And sometimes it's tough to watch.
For it to be done from someone who is, you know, focused on the movies and the content. And some of it's very, you know,
superficial.
Who did your suit?
Right.
But I think that Hugh Grant went in there with good intentions and immediately dismissed Ashley Graham when he made the Vanity Fair reference, referring to Vanity Fair, which is a novel that is a satire of social society from back in the day. And she missed that reference completely, thought he was talking about the party because there's a Vanity Fair after party, which makes sense. The minute that she missed that, he had just decided
She was not
up to snuff. So he shut down. So, I mean, it would have been better if she had called him out on that, maybe, but she tried to be happy and play along.
Well,
so it was awkward.
Okay, wait.
But are you saying it's his obligation to just answer the goofy little questions?
Because
it doesn't matter how.
You are excellent live. You know the answer is always yes. Let's dance. That's what makes you so good live. And among many other things. He went in there and his answer was no. Like, I thought he was an improv guy. I thought he was an actor. Like, you are on the world stage. Oh, you got a couple of inane questions. You know, like, what would possess him to answer, "I was in it for 3 seconds"? Like, he just looked like a jerk.
Yeah.
He looked like a jerk. And she, my view of it, she was trying everything she had to get him to say something that was fun. And he was like, "I don't want to have any fun. I'm here for other reasons. Like, I have to be here."
Yeah.
Like, and this is like the broadcast. This is ABC, right? This is not E. This is not, you know, Periphery. Like, this is the broadcast, I think.
Yeah. And if he was aware of that, you would think he would have played along a little bit more. He has a reputation for doing that kind of thing, being a little bit difficult, for throwing those one-word answers out. And then she was just totally, obviously, not prepared for that and didn't know how to sort of play along with what he was doing.
I guess you could cut it both ways, that she didn't play well to his vibe, which was
negative.
I mean,
it's a bit of a British-American style difference, too, maybe.
I don't know.
You
love him, right?
I love him. I do think he was awful. I think there's been athletes, you know, who've done the same thing.
Yeah, dig down deep, 110%. Yeah.
Intermission questions, and they just decide they don't like someone.
But the
eye rolling was mean. I'm sure she felt kind of awful afterwards.
Oh,
it was definitely awkward all around, but I sort of just feel like I get kind of where they're coming from, where there's so many repeat dumb questions all the time.
Yeah.
But like you say, he shouldn't have jumped in there and done it if he wasn't prepared to kind of play that game, knowing that's what it's going to be on the champagne carpet.
My thing is, other actors and actresses have done more of that than Hugh Grant. And like Brad Pitt, like they perform. That's part of the gig. And the thing is, at 62 years old, I don't know how many other Oscars he's going to be involved in, you know? So
get
it's like,
yourself.
Get over yourself, I think, anyway. And I don't watch, but I knew about this right away, which says this punched through in a way that I'm sure his team and agents and he himself perhaps is not very thrilled with today.
Maybe like a Joan Rivers or someone would have handled it differently if they were the interviewer.
I don't think she's pure as the driven snow here. It was kind of inane.
Yeah.
So I get it's a dance. It's just that she tried several times to get him to two-step, and he's
I'm
playing.
Trying to play devil's advocate a little bit. I mean, I agree. He shouldn't have stood in there if he, you know. Sometimes there's a sit-down interview where someone is supposedly prepared for ages and they're sitting down with you and you're promoting the movie, and then the questions are really awkward, and then you're thinking, okay, well, why am I here when this person is not prepared? But for this kind of situation.
Yeah, and not to beat a dead horse here, but I mean, I don't know why I'm not looking forward to any movies. I'm not interested in seeing any people. I don't know what kind of suit I'm wearing, and I'm only in the movie for a few seconds, so why would you ask me about that? That's basically what I took away from that. That's a pretty bad interview, right?
Yeah. If you don't want to answer those questions, bring up something else.
I don't know. Talk about, I don't know, like Brexit or so. Like, what is it?
Yeah, what are you interested to see?
What are you
pretty open. He could have brought up anyone and talked about anyone's story or
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, long way from Notting
John
Hill.
John Coopy said he would have brought up all of his past misdeeds and just
That'd be good. Are you just getting off Sunset Boulevard? No, that's a long time ago.
Anyway, so you weren't watching last night. You were busy being Mr. Active Superhero Guy out cross-country skiing.
Not really.
You did your 200-kilometer loop, and then you got up and played pickleball this morning.
Played pickleball this morning, and I'm a broken record, but you were out as well, and the snow is just beautiful. Even as we're losing the snow in the city.
Slow, short.
Yeah, little, good though. Great.
Just be out in nature for a moment kind of experience. But man, you go hard.
Well.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd get a parking spot on Sunday. So I was surprised I got a parking
spot.
How
early did you go?
Because of daylight savings, I think I got there at about 10 o'clock and the parking lot wasn't full. On Saturday, I went at 7:30 with a friend, and we got the third parking spot. We came down at 10 o'clock after the ski, 9:30, parking lot's closed, full.
Okay.
But, so, anyway, it's very popular. So it's great to see because the grooming at NCC is in Gatineau.
It's incredible.
Unbelievable.
So how much longer will the season go here? What are we, March 13th, we've got a little bit of snow today. Tomorrow, we got a lot down on the ground there. We've got fairly reasonable temperatures, nothing getting too warm. How long a ski season is it going to be?
I think cross country will be mid-April, like another month, I think.
Because I'm just getting into it now. So
you're doing great.
Weeks.
You're doing great.
11:18 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Katie Griffin is in for Matt Scooby. She'll be talking to us after 11:30 about the CTV Ottawa news at noon. Matt is in Toronto.
Your morning.
Doing a little something there. He's going to tell us all about that in case you missed him this morning. You might want to tune in this week. He'll join us from Toronto in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowles.